Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
10th canto, chapter 40, entitled Prayers by Akura, text 11. Sattvam rajastama iti bhavata prakritir guna tesu hi prakrita bhavata abrahmastavaradaya sattvam rajastama iti Bhavata prakritir guna Teshu hi prakrita pauta Abrahma stavaradaya Sattvam rajastama eti Bhavata prakritir guna Teshu hi prakrita bhavata Abrahma stavaradaya
Sattvam rajastama iti
Sattvam rajastama iti
Bhavata prakritir guna Teshu hi prakrita bhavata Abrahma stavaradaya
Satram Rajastama Iti Bhavata Prakritir Guna Teshu Hi Prakrita Prakta
Abrahma Savaraya.
Ladies, Satram Rajastama Iti Bhavata Prakritir Guna Sattvam rajastama iti
Bhavata prakritir guna
Teshu hi prakrita bhavata Abrahma stavaradaya. Sattvam, goodness, Raja, passion, Tama, ignorance, Iti, thus known, Bhavata, your, Prakriti, of the material nature, Gunaha, the qualities, Teshu, to them, he, certainly, Prakrita, the conditioned in living entities. Prota, woven. Brahma, up to Lord Brahma. Stavaradaya, starting with the non-moving creatures. Translation by the disciples of His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Goodness, passion and ignorance, the qualities of your material nature entangle all conditioned living beings, from Brahma down to the non-moving creatures. Tubhyam namaste. Dvaraja Jistaya Savatmane Sarva Diyam Cha Saksane Guna Pavaho Yam Avidya Kvita Pravartate Deva Nrityag Atmasu. To whoever I offer my humble obeisances to you, who are the supreme soul of all beings, witnessing everyone's consciousness with unbiased vision. The current of your material modes, produced by the force of ignorance, flows strongly among the living beings who assume identities as demigods, humans, and animals. Next verses. Agnir mukam tevana agare ikshanam suro labho labir ato disa suta yoikam surindas tava babato neva kuksir marut prana balam pa kalputam. Fire is said to be your face, the earth your feet, the sun your eye, and the sky your navel. The directions are your senses of hearing. The chief demigods are your arms, and the oceans are your abdomen. Heaven is thought to be your head, and the wind your vital air and physical strength. The trees and plants are the hairs on your body, and the clouds the hair on your head. And the mountains, the bones and nails of you, supreme. The passage of day and night are the blinking of your eyes. The progenitor of mankind is your genitals, and the rain is your semen. Tvabhyayatman purase prakalpate lokasapala bahujiva sankula yatajale sanjihata Jala kasu pi udambare va masakka manomaya. All the worlds with their presiding deities and teeming populations originate anew the inexhaustible supreme personality of Godhead. These worlds travel within you, the basis of your mind and senses, just as the aquatics swim in the sea or tiny insects burrow within an udambara fruit.
Yani yani ha rupani kridayanatam vibharasihi tir amritsa sutu loke mudha gayanti te yasa.
To enjoy your pastimes, you manifest yourself in various forms in this material world, and these incarnations cleanse away the unhappiness of those who joyfully chant your glories.
Namakarne matsyaya phalalayabi charne cha hayasarishne nama tubhyam madhu kaitaba mrityave.
I offer my obeisances unto you, the cause of creation, Lord Matsya, who swam about in the ocean of dissolution, to Lord Hayagriva, the killer of madhu and kaitaba. To the immense tortoise, Lord Korma, who supported the Mandira mountain, and to the boar incarnation, Lord Varaha, who enjoyed lifting the earth. Purport. The Vishvakosha dictionary states that the word Akuparya indicates the king of the tortoises.
Om Gyanatmanandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshu Unmilitam Jena Talsmai Sri Guru Venamaha. Vanchakalpa Rubyascha Kripa Sundu Bhyabacha Patitanam Bhavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha. Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Garadhara Shivasali Gaura Bhakti Vrinda. Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare.
So, Bhagavatam. The Bhagavatam is Srila Vyasadeva's commentary on the Vedanta Sutra, the end of all knowledge. And what we see is the Bhagavatam is an illustration of how to live in relationship to the Absolute Truth. What you see is devotees or living entities who are perfectly enlightened about the nature of the Absolute Truth and how they live in relation to that Absolute Truth. That is Bhagavatam. What is that conclusion of perfect knowledge, Vedanta, the end of all knowledge, is that one should become a devotee. This is the purport Srimad Bhagavatam gives to Vedanta Sutra. In the Bhagavatam, what we see is we have many personalities such as Akura. Akura is a enlightened soul. And when we hear from these enlightened souls, they speak of the Absolute Truth. And we can learn in that way. We can both learn from the knowledge they speak, and also the mood with which they speak it. Two things are there. Bhagavatam is not just for the head, it's for the heart as well. Devotees like Akura, full of knowledge, but their hearts are also fully expressed in devotional service. This is actually the state of perfect enlightenment. We are actually persons in the absolute state of being, according to Bhagavatam. Therefore, when we reach the enlightened state, not only should we have our minds cognizant of the reality of things, also our hearts should be open and flowing with devotion, and our hands should be active in the world, well, active in existence, because we might not always be in this world. This is one world out of many worlds. That means to be active in existence somewhere, wherever Krishna wants. So Akura is here in these verses, in these prayers, he is demonstrating his comprehensive understanding of the Absolute Truth. In its variety, actually. He's speaking about the variety of the Absolute Truth, the varieties and the level, different levels of understanding of the Absolute Truth. Because yes, despite pop spirituality, what pop spirituality might tell you, and what many of the established traditions of the world might tell you, the Absolute Truth has variety. This is philosophy. This is the philosophy of Krishna consciousness. You see, the common conception of the Absolute Truth is that it is one, or what there is a oneness. The idea is that behind the varieties that we perceive in this world exists a homogeneous oneness. Now this is understandable, you know, many people who think about spiritual things, you know, the coming of age, you know, between the ages of 15 and 20, if they think seriously about these things, they'll come to this conclusion. Many, many people come to this conclusion by their own insight, that there's a oneness. Especially if you take various drugs and so forth, many people come to this realization through the use of drugs. Because what they perceive is that there is a totality of all energies, and that all variety
is born out of a pool of energy. You can see just by looking at the world and the way things happen that this is actually a fact. Our bodies come out of nature, they manifest in a certain form, and then at the end of the body disintegrates, different elements of the body disintegrate and becomes compost for microorganisms and then plant growth and so many things. From dust to dust, ashes to ashes, or ashes to ashes, dust to dust, as the Bible would say. From dust you have come, and from dust you will return. But the thing is, the dust itself is never destroyed. It's just changing form. I haven't heard one quote, well, I'm not sure how accurate it is, but because there's so many millions and billions of molecules in our body, in all likelihood we have a molecule of Albert Einstein's body floating in us, of Elvis somewhere there, because this energy has been cycled, you see. This energy has been cycled. Science will tell you, energy is not created or destroyed at any time. It simply changes form. So, looking at things in this way, you can say, yes, there is a totality of energy from which variety manifests. Therefore, the foundation of all things is a oneness. And also, you can think of spiritually, it makes sense that our consciousness has emanated from some source. It is also never created or destroyed, it simply changes form. And if you read books of spiritual knowledge, even Bhagavad Gita, it says that consciousness is actually an indivisible element. The idea is in science that you get down to a certain, the elements of the periodic table, and you can't divide them anymore. You've reached the fundamental building blocks, the eternal building blocks of material things. And in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says that also consciousness is like that. It's actually an indivisible building block. You can't break it down. So, in this way, understanding this, you can say, well, that's also one of the fundamental energies of the oneness of all energies. That's just come out of that. And science will tell you that as well, that consciousness has actually come out of the combination of matter. Spiritual traditions will tell you something else, that consciousness is actually one of the elements. But if we take a wide sweeping view of everything, we can see, well, there's a oneness, there's a totality of all energies. And therefore, this relieves people of a lot of anxiety. You think, well, there's a oneness. And then, born out of this idea, there's different approaches to life. Some think, you know, well, there is a oneness, and the conception that there is variety, that's simply an illusion. And when we become enlightened, we will perceive the oneness of all energies, and we will see we will cease to see ourselves as separate. We will have merged, and this becomes the goal. Others say, well, you know, the fact is that we are all one, and there's a dream of variety right now. The dream is ultimately insubstantial. Therefore, let me, since I'm God dreaming, let me just enjoy the dream. Makes sense, right? Just enjoy the dream, because it's my dream. I mean, I have manifested myself as all of us, so I can enjoy. Therefore, I will enjoy my lila, my pastimes in the variety. But such conclusions, they actually arise from a limited understanding of the absolute truth.
What we see in the guru's understanding is far more comprehensive.
Let's go through these verses that we looked at today. Generally, when you speak from Bhagavatam, if there's no purport, you just read on until you come to a purport. That's why I did that today.
So the first verse, goodness, passion and ignorance are the qualities of your material nature, and they entangle all conditioned living beings, from Brahma down to the non-moving creatures.
So, Akura is recognizing that this energy that makes up this world and gives us this dreaming state of being, that belongs to Krishna. That is an energy of the Absolute Truth. So this is one understanding that it's the energy of the Absolute Truth, it's his dream energy. And it's entangling all the living beings within this world.
Next verse. I offer my obeisances unto you, who as the supreme soul of all beings, is the witness of everyone's consciousness with unbiased vision. The current of your material modes, produced by the force of ignorance, flows strongly among the living beings, who assume identities as demigods, humans, and animals.
So Krishna, Akura is recognizing the all-pervasive aspect of the Supreme Soul. He witnesses everybody's consciousness. He is the knower of all fields. We know our individual field. He knows all fields. This is Paramatma, aspect of the Absolute Truth. And a little bit about the character of this super soul is also mentioned, that he is unbiased, impartial. There's one verse I really like in Bhagavad Gita where Krishna describes his politically correct attitude.
He says, Samoham svabhuteshu na me dvesho sti na priya na banjanti ye bhajanti tu mam bhaktya mayate teshu chapi aham.
I envy no one, nor am I partial to anyone. I am equal to all. So he's unbiased. He's just witnessing. Having set up this world for us, he is witnessing our activities. Whether we do good or bad, that is our prerogative. He is witnessing, impartial.
But whoever renders service to me in devotion is a friend, is in me, and I am also a friend to him.
So then he says, but one who wants to remember me and re-establish that relationship with me, then I become more intimate. I become a friend. But ordinarily, he's impartial. He doesn't take personally the dastardly acts of the conditioned souls. Nor does he particularly smile upon the pious activities. He's impartial. Because it's all a dream, this material world. It's all a little sandpit where we're playing. And Krishna is simply witnessing it. And we build our castles and we knock them down. And Krishna is indifferent, really, to all this Maya activity. But when we decide we want to re-establish the relationship, then he becomes a friend. And then he goes on to say, describing the universal form, fire is said to be your face, the earth your feet, and the sun your eye, and the sky your navel. The directions are your sense of hearing. The chief demigods are your arms. The ocean is your abdomen. Heaven is thought to be your head, and the wind your vital air and physical strength. The trees and plants are the hairs on your body. The clouds are the hair on your head, and the mountains the bones and nails of you, the Supreme. The passage of day and night is the blinking of your eyes. The progenitor of mankind are your genitals, and the rain your semen. So here,
This is a very popular understanding of absolute truth. God is the universe. God is the universe. He is the nature of everything. And that's true. The Vedas also say that, yes. Krishna is the universe. He is the natural world. And the world is actually his body. But then Akura goes on. It's deeper than that. All the worlds with their presiding demigods and teeming populations originate in you, the inexhaustible personality of Godhead. These worlds travel within you, the basis of the mind and senses. Just as the aquatics swim in the sea, or tiny insects burrow within the Udambara fruit. So this verse is saying, Krishna, you are the container of everything. You know, like a container, everything's inside that container. And Krishna is the container of everything. And then he goes on. To enjoy your pastimes, you manifest yourself in various forms in this material world. And these incarnations cleanse away all unhappiness of those who joyfully chant your glories. So this is where Krishna consciousness takes things to another level. All these other conceptions that people have of the absolute truth, they're contained within the Vaishnava conception. But then it's taken a step further. There is also the personality of Godhead, or the Supreme, in which everything exists and from which everything emanates. He also exists separately, inconceivable, actually. This is Vaishnava philosophy. Everything is one. There is a oneness in terms of it all being born out of the energy of the same divine being. But there's also a difference in that Krishna is also separate. He has an identity of his own. Because normally when you take something, if I take this microphone and dismantle it into its different components, I have all the components. But then, where's the whole microphone? So similarly, if we take this world apart, and God is everything, all the parts, but there's also, he's also there as the whole as well. And he can also appear within the world. It's inconceivable, actually. That's why it's called Achintya Beda Beda Tattva. But it accounts for existence and our experience of life on a much more profound level, because we have personality, we have desire for relationship, for interaction with others, we have our will, our desires, and so many things. Where did that come from? That has to come from the absolute truth. And is this all an illusion? That our personhood is actually an illusion, and actually beyond our personhood, to which we want to return, is actually a inert kind of empty state of being with no desire activities. Is that superior? Is merging and becoming inactive, is that superior to being with so much variety and having desire and acting and tasting so many different flavors? No. You know, the blank movie screen is inferior to when the movie is playing. You know, of course, if it's an illusion, then there's a problem, especially if we become attached to the illusion. So we need to dispel the illusion, but in dispelling the illusion, we should not jump to the conclusion that all display of variety and display of personhood and relationships and activities is automatically illusory, and there is no activities in the absolute truth. It's completely opposite and it's empty. This is a premature conclusion. Now we see that in Prabhupada's books, he's heavy on impersonalism. He's heavy on Mayavadi philosophy. You know, rascals, this and that. And we even see, we chant these prayers. Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pracharine Nivishesha Shunyavadi Prasthita Desha Tadine. That obeisance is unto you, O spiritual master. You are kindly preaching the message of Lord Gaurasundara, especially in the western countries, which are filled with impersonalism and voidism. There is a oneness. Why be so heavy on it? You know, it's a natural. If you analyze things, it's kind of like a fair enough conclusion, and it's not completely wrong. But the responses then arrive from the conclusion of oneness, or the incomplete understanding of simply oneness without difference, becomes a problem. Krishna doesn't like that, and nor does Krishna's devotees. That's why devotees aren't very receptive to just hearing things are all one, and that I am you and you are me, and all that. They don't like that. Why don't they like that? Because it destroys the opportunity for bhakti, for loving exchange between the soul and the supreme soul. If we again become one, where is the question of exchange? You can't relationship means there has to be at least two things. And in fact, if you get more variety, it said that variety is the mother of enjoyment, the spice of life. If you get so many flavors of living entities, then the Lord's pleasure increases more and more. He gives the living entities free will. Why? So there can actually be some dynamic action. You know, if you program a computer, you can guarantee what will happen next. Because it's all happening according to the program pre-installed. You can turn on your computer and it will say, "Good morning, Adrian, I love you." But it will say that every single time, no matter how you treat it. There will be no dynamic exchange there because it has no free will. Therefore, the living entities, qualitatively one with the Supreme, have free will. This is Vaishnava philosophy. And therefore, there has to be a material world and there has to be a spiritual world. Because when you make your choice, actually I don't want to be a devotee, I want to be the enjoyer. There has to be a place where you can come and do that. Of course, we never actually become it. That's why we become frustrated. Because we think we're overlording material nature, but actually we're under her stringent laws, her stringent grip, you know. You know, people would say, you know, "I am God." And Prabhupada would say things like, "Oh, why do you have a toothache? You got a toothache? God has a toothache? How did that happen?" Something, obviously, is outside your control, is punishing you. Or, anyway, you can't, if you don't want to suffer, you still have to suffer. And then the ultimate assertion of a power superior to you is that you die. You don't want to die. But death is forced upon you. But anyway, in this world, we can do our God project. You know, imagine ourselves to be God, to try and control and enjoy it, to try and expand our empire, to try and gain influence and sway over the other living beings. We can do our God project, but eventually, if we're authentic to ourselves, we'll come to the point, hang on, this isn't working. And really begin to understand, actually, I am in the stringent grip of somebody else's scheme. So then I change my position, change my tack. The proper response to understanding one's the absolute truth
is to become a devotee, like a guru, to enter into loving exchange, to voluntarily harmonize with the will of the Lord. This is Vaishnava philosophy. And this is what Krishna wants. You know, if Krishna expanded us as the living beings to perform loving pastimes with us, if we become, say, Buddhists and say, actually, I'm just going to imagine that I don't exist and go into meditation and become completely inactive, can you imagine that? If you had some friends, you know, and you would think, okay, we've got my friends together now, we're gonna have some fun, and somebody just goes and sits down and tries to become completely inert. That's great. What if your other friend says, no, we are one, I will again merge, and tries to merge with you. You think, hang on, this is not the idea, we're supposed to have pastimes. If you become one, then how can we have our pastimes, you know? So it's, Krishna doesn't like that. He wants you to be a devotee and to engage in loving exchange, which is always based on service. Now, to finish up, we'll read a little pastime from Chaitanya Charitamrita. This is from Lord Chaitanya's childhood pastimes. After some days, the Lord began to move his legs and walk. He mixed with other children and exhibited varieties of sports. One day, while the Lord was enjoying his playful sports with the other little children, Mother Sachi, his mother, brought a dish filled with fused rice and sweetmeats and asked the child to sit down and eat them. But when she returned to her household duties, the child, hiding from his mother, began to eat dirt. Seeing this, Mother Sachi hastily returns, exclaiming, "What is this? What is this?" She snatched the dirt from the hands of the Lord and inquired why he was eating it. Crying, the child inquired from his mother, "Why are you angry? You have already given me dirt to eat. What is my fault?" Fused rice, sweetmeats, and anything eatable is all about the transformation of dirt. This is dirt, that is dirt. Please consider, what is the difference between them? It's one. It's all one. This is what Lord Chaitanya is preaching to his mother. He's saying, actually, it's all one. And, you know, the dirt nourishes the seed, which then goes into a rice plant. And then how does the seed become a rice? What do you call it? Rice paddy. Yeah. How does the because it's absorbing nutrients from the dirt, right? And it's building its body out of the dirt, transforming it, and building its body out of the dirt. So, what's the difference, you know? Dirt in this form or dirt in that form? It's all dirt. Why are you angry with me? This body is a transformation of dirt. Because I eat the rice, you know, which is dirt, ultimately. And then it becomes my flesh. So this body is also a transformation of dirt. And the eatables are also a transformation of dirt. Please reflect upon this. You are blaming me without consideration. I'm just a little boy. What can I say? Astonished that the child was speaking Mayavadi philosophy, Mother Sachi replied,
Who has taught you this philosophical speculation that justifies eating dirt? Replying to the Mayavadi idea of the child philosopher, Mother Snochi said, "My dear boy, if we eat dirt, if we eat earth transformed into grains, our body is nourished and becomes strong. If we eat dirt in its crude state, the body becomes diseased instead of nourished and thus is destroyed." Makes sense, right? That's our experience. In a water pot, which is a transformation of dirt, I can bring water very easily. But if I poured water on a lump of dirt, the lump would soak up the water and my labor would be useless. So this is Vaishnava philosophy. Yes, everything is a transformation of dirt, you know, the five elements. But they're manifested in different features, and they have different functions and different qualities. This is the same with all Krishna's energy, including his expanded jiva souls. What's the verse? Mamai vamso jiva loke jiva bhuta sanatana. That all the living entities in this conditioned world are my eternal fragmented parts and parcels. They're eternally fragmented from me, but they're also parts and parcels. They're units in of themselves, even though born of my energy. So they're eternally one in quality. They've come from me. They're of my quality. Just like you take a drop of seawater from the ocean, you can analyze that. It has the same qualities as the ocean. But they are eternal parts and parcels. In quantity, they're much less. But they're the same. Just like Krishna's a person, we're also persons. It's much more practical. You know, if you just say things are all one, they can't actually function. And a proper Brahmavadi won't actually do anything. They won't talk. They won't go out and preach their philosophy. Mayavadi philosophy. That's what, if you ever have trouble with a Mayavadi, you know, saying it's all one, you know, I am you, you are me. You just say, well, shut up. Because, I mean, why would you talk to me if we're the same person? Why relate, you know? Just merge. Go and sit down and merge somewhere. No, the practical thing is there's so many varieties. And that's why we, in this world, we experience so much variety. So, Mother Sachi has defeated Lord Chaitanya's Mayavadi argument. And then the Lord replied to his mother, "Why did you conceal this self-realization by not teaching me this practical philosophy in the beginning?" See, many times, you know, people have this Mayavadi philosophy, and they just don't know any better. They're actually innocent. They're not demons, because they actually want to be devotees, but they just don't have that. They have, you see, this fundamental dispositions. People have fundamental dispositions at a very deep level of their existence. They're either inclined to devotional service. That means if they find out, they like the devotional sentiment, the idea of devotion to the Lord, or otherwise they're envious. And therefore, if they do have some conception of the Absolute Truth, actually the Absolute Truth is me, I am that. But many people, they, if they find out the real thing, they'll become devotees. Their hearts will, and suddenly the cramp on their hearts will be released, and suddenly their natural love and devotion for the Lord will arise. So you shouldn't prematurely label people as demons with no hope. We first, because this philosophy will come out a lot, especially if you preach, you'll experience it a lot. It's the 99.9% of people are overtaken by this conception. And it's in all the books. In fact, the only real spiritual path that really teaches this these days is Krishna consciousness. It actually teaches true personalism. Even a lot of Christians you'll find that they're actually, the ultimate, the way they actually think about the absolute truth is that, I mean, you have Jesus, the embodiment of the Father, but when they actually think of the Father, pretty formless. They don't have any real conception of that form. And they think, even if there is form, that is subordinate to the personal feature. No, sorry, that is subordinate to the formlessness. That is simply a manifestation of Niguna Brahman. You know, Brahman, or energy without form. Spiritual energy, formless without form or quality. And then the other, the subordinate thing later becomes manifest from the unmanifest. But if they actually hear the real thing, many people will become devotees. Many won't. And that's why we have to teach this. So anyway, Lord Chaitanya, he said, why did you conceal self-realization by not teaching me this practical philosophy from the beginning? Now that I can understand this philosophy, I shall not eat dirt. Whenever I'm hungry, I shall suck your breast and drink your breast milk. After saying that, the Lord, smiling slightly, climbed on the lap of his mother and sucked her breast. Thus, under various excuses, the Lord exhibited his opulences as much as possible in his childhood, and later, after exhibiting such opulences, he hid himself. So, this is what... See, Krishna doesn't like Mayavadi philosophy. He was playing this little pastime as Lord Chaitanya. You know, showing how impractical, actually, this whole, this oneness without difference is, you know, eating dirt. And then his mother defeated him. And then he was very happy because then he could again engage in loving exchange. But that's the worst thing about it. The worst manifestation of Mayavada philosophy is not that everybody goes around eating dirt. That's because it destroys the opportunity for bhakti, for devotion. So that's what Lord Chaitanya was actually getting at, you know. And then after that had all been cleared up, then he again engaged in devotional exchange with his devotee, his mother. So, this is, we can learn all this from Bhagavatam by the example of great devotees like Akura, who knew everything about Krishna, is in full knowledge about the different aspects of the Absolute Truth, yet he had this mood of praise, worship, devotional service. And this fully satiated his spiritual personhood or his heart. So, thank you very much. Any questions or comments on these points? Yes.
I think that Guru's vision requires multi level understanding and chanting of that. And I've got a couple of points that I'm going to make. And I, for example, the fiery Lord's feet and the sun is the Lord's head. On one hand, we have, you know, the sun is the luminous, the demigod dwelling in the Lord, in the sun and the moon. And sutras dwelling in the feet and brahmas in the head. So there's so many classifications which aren't really classifications, but they're all transcendental. I was going to ask you perhaps to talk a little bit about the sun, you know, the multi-level
of the sun.
Of the sun. And secondly, then I'll just finish. I don't think there is a void or nothingness behind in Christianity. Because if you look around the room, most people resemble their father or mother.
Mm.
So Jesus said, my father and I are one. So what he resembled was his father.
Mm.
So therefore, one doesn't have to go further.
Mm.
I'm not projecting, I'm just giving an opinion.
Mm. No, I was quoting actually from Ravindra Swarup. If you know much about that devotee, he's a great academic, one of Prabhupada's first disciples. I've got this nice lecture series on defeating impersonalism, and he was saying that the way people worship in Christianity is different from their actual ultimate conception, how they actually think. And even many, many devotees, especially in the early stages of Krishna consciousness, are actually infected by Mayavadi philosophy, impersonalism. I know myself, I am. When I think of the Absolute Truth, you know, you think, what comes first? Is there kind of a oneness, homogeneous energy, and then Krishna is an expression of that, a very beautiful expression of, or is Krishna actually the basis, as he says in Bhagavad Gita, of the impersonal Brahman? You know, Ravindra Swarup, he came to the temple as a new devotee, and he understood the deities. You know, the deities, what they are, is there a we're projecting our idea onto the absolute truth. So we've actually got something to grab hold of and worship. But actually beyond the form of the deity is the impersonal oneness. And that's really what we're worshipping, is the universal energy, the God beyond words. And then he heard one of the devotees speaking. And they said, no. They were talking to another guest. And they said, no. The Brahma Jyoti, or the light, the impersonal effulgence, is actually emanating from Krishna's personal body. And then he suddenly felt all his impersonal concepts just came crashing down when he heard that, you know. And so it's actually quite a deep thing that we have, this impersonal conception. We might not be so conscious of it in the beginning. And Krishna consciousness really bites at this subconscious sort of idea we have, you know, keeps biting at it. And the thing is, if we keep chanting, and if we keep practicing, and keep hearing, it slowly dissolves, you know, it dissolves away, and actually, because it actually blocks true devotion to the Lord as the personal Godhead. You know, actually, you know, when we serve Krishna, you know, he's eating, Krishna's eating, you know, the absolute truth, the all-pervading everything is eating. No, we're actually serving a person, just like you might serve, when you serve your spiritual master, you're serving your spiritual master. And the devotee doesn't want to become, well, eventually once I'm enlightened, then I won't need my spiritual master anymore. No. The idea is the devotee wants to serve the spiritual master life after life. Why? Because there's a genuine personal connection there between the personal identity of the spiritual master and the personal identity of the disciple. There's a relationship. Yeah. Sorry. You want me to talk about the sun as well, huh?
Well, what I'm saying is a poor vision, except there is so many understandings of what's in the Lord's body.
Yes. Yes. I think Prabhupada says that this is a way of anthropomorphizing the universe, is personalizing it. He says it's something like an idea. The idea of the different varnas being parts of the Lord's body is a way of understanding how society should work as a whole. You know, the legs carry the body. So the sudras do a lot of the practical work. They're strong, and they carry the body. The vices, they're the belly. They provide the economic foundation. They generate the economics, and which ultimately, fundamentally, is food. You know, in Vedic economy, you look at the cowherd men of the cowherd villages of Vrindavan were rich. But what were they rich in? They were rich in milk products, food grains. And these days, despite being so opulent, the modern world, it's very hard to get like a nice, juicy organic vegetable, you know, that's not completely, you know, just bleak and like, you know, full of chemicals and dwarfed, you know, because the soil has been destroyed. The soil has been destroyed, which is nourishing the vegetables. The dirt. The vegetables are a transformation of dirt, but if the dirt's of very low quality, then the vegetables will also be like that. So, anyway, the vices, they produce the economic foundation of society, which is the belly. The kshatriyas are the arms who protect the body. And the brahmanas are the head, which provide the intelligentsia, how to actually do everything, what's the purpose of it all, etc. If you've got a headless body, it's got this pretty useless thing, you know, you get that useless manifestation. So that's the idea with the understanding the form of the Lord in that way. And with the cosmic manifestation, Prabhupada says it's something like an idea. To think of the upper planetary systems, the Lord's head, you know, it's different chakras as well, going down to the Patala Loka at the soles of his feet. And then you've also got these other ideas like the trees, they stand up on the surface of the earth like the head standing up on the body. You know, as the Lord blinks, you know, you blink, everything goes black. When you open your eyes, everything goes light, the day and the night. The sun and the moon, the two primary cosmic bodies, the two eyes producing light, and the light by which we see. Like that different, it's like a metaphor, how to understand the universe. Like the fire is the digestion, because fire in Ayurveda, fire is metabolism. Fire is the process of transforming one substance to another. Digestion does that. There's not actually like a fire burning in our stomach, but there is acid is there, and it's transforming. The different foods we put in there transforms it into flesh. Fire also is what processes ideas in the head. So in this way, yeah, is that helpful?
Yes, thanks.
What do you want me to elaborate further on something again?
Let's talk a little bit about the genesis, the sun and the genesis when the Lord comes.
Oh, I don't know too much about that one actually.
Okay.
Yeah, but this, you see, nature can be observed from many different levels. We can, just like, you can see the... there's many different levels to see reality. These days, people just see the impersonal effects of nature, but they don't see the consciousness behind it, or the spirits behind it, the devas, the demigods. So you have the sun in terms of its combustion. Just like when you see the body, you can just look at the physical processes of the body, and you can watch this matter moving around. But then if you're a little bit more conscious, you'll see, oh, there's actually a mind in there. There's actually emotions going on, there's actually thoughts behind it, you know, matter's just not moving like a tree swaying in the wind. There's another level of being going on there. And ultimately, there's consciousness, there's awareness, there's a spiritual sentient being within that body, behind the physical. So you can look at those different levels in the same way you can look at the actions of all the elements. And the sun. I'm not sure so much about the dynasties expanding from the sun. That's probably all in Bhagavad Gita. There's many lists of so-and-so, we got so-and-so, we got so-and-so going down. Okay.
Thank you.
Yes, my lady.
And the way and Shakti's and that song is the description of Vira Tulpa, which is this song without the cosmic manifestation of it, it's not the Bhagavan aspect.
Definitely.
And Vira Purusha is the expansion of the super soul, of Kaiva Prakasha Vishnu. And it's really nice to explain in the second sense of this chapter, the fourth, fifth, and visible fifth. And the time is the
Yeah, it's on there, it's good. Anything else? Thank you so much. Gandharva Sri Bhagavatam.